It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. I'm Ann Strainchamps. This hour, the power of play. When I was little, my sister and I used to spend a lot of the summer outdoors, riding around on our bikes, catching fireflies, or just lying on blankets under trees, reading and talking and playing card games. I bet you have memories like that too. Maybe of a time in your life when it seemed like all you had to do was play. Well, new research suggests that tag and hopscotch and all the other ways we played as kids actually taught us the skills that we use as adults every day. How to manage conflict, deal with fear, form relationships. Play is how we train for adulthood. And that's good. But psychologist Peter Gray is worried that kids today are playing less, even a lot less, than we did.
Yes, there's no doubt they are definitely playing less than previous generations. I should probably, to make my answer clear, say something about what play is. When I say playing less, I mean that there is less of what other people might call free play. But to me, free play is play. They're playing less on their own. They're playing less in ways where they are controlling and directing the play, where they're making their own choices, solving their own problems, where they, not adults, are determining from moment to moment what they're doing.
So I take it Little League, youth soccer leagues, karate classes, these, you don't count these as play?
These are not play by this definition. And you know, I can elaborate on this, but there's a dramatic difference in what children learn in those kinds of adult-directed sports and activities compared to the activities that they choose and direct themselves.
Like what? What's the difference in what kids learn?
Well, the big difference is this, that when you are playing, when you are in control of your activities, when you must make the decisions, you learn how to do all those things. You learn how to make decisions. You learn how to control your own behavior because there's no adult controlling it. You learn how to get along with your peers as equals because there's no adult solving your problems. You, as a child, are innately motivated to want to play with other kids. So a natural punishment, if you will, for bullying or for not paying attention to what the other kids want and need is that they won't play with you. And that's how children learn, well, wait a minute, I've got to pay attention to this other person's needs.
It's interesting because there's been a lot written over the years about the importance of play for very young children, preschool kids, for instance, the importance of imaginative play, art play, sensory play. But we don't talk that much about play for older kids when you get to school age, junior high, high school.
That's exactly right. And I think that's because of certain cultural blinders we have. You know, I've seen developmental psychology textbooks where the early years up to about age 4 or 5 are called the play years. And then you begin to use other terms to talk about children as they get older. We have this concept that children play until they start school. You don't have to go very far back in even our history, even the history that I've lived, to see that, in fact, children continue to play right on through their teenage years. Adults play if they have the opportunity. But when people are free to play, and they continue learning through play.
Hmm. There's an example in your book that I haven't been able to get out of my mind that I wanted to ask you about. You tell the story about how children played during the Holocaust in concentration camps. It's kind of remarkable and also really illustrates that point we were getting at about the difference between how kids want to play and what parents think play is or should be.
There are two morals of that story. This comes from a book by George Emblin that I was referring to called Children and Play in the Holocaust. And he did studies of diaries and interviews of Holocaust concentration camp survivors. And the remarkable thing he discovered is that even under those horrid conditions, children who were physically strong enough to play, played. And they played not at games designed to escape their horrid conditions, but designed to deal with their horrid conditions. They played at things like crematorium, where they would throw rocks and scream like the screams they heard in the distance, and so on. They played at games that allowed them to understand and embrace and somehow deal emotionally and physically with the horrid situation in which they're in. And so what this shows, first of all, is play is such a strong drive that you do it even when you're hungry, even when you're physically weak. It's such a strong drive in children, such a strong need. And secondly, that play for children is not an escape from the real world. It's a way of dealing with the real world. That's really what play is about. Play is children's incorporating into a kind of fantasy world the realities that are around them. And in the fantasy world, they can deal with these realities and they can practice dealing with these realities so that they can deal better with them in the real world.
And what are the consequences for kids themselves? I mean, if young people today have less and less time to devote to free play, are we seeing any results?
I think we're seeing very serious consequences of it. So let me describe what I've found looking historically. So over the last 50 to 60 years, we have seen a continuous decline in children's freedom to play. Over this same period of time, we've seen a continuous, gradual, but ultimately dramatic increase in all sorts of mental disorders in children and young adults. It's not just that we are identifying disorders that we didn't know to look for before, or that we've changed the definition of disorders. Even by standard clinical questionnaires that have been given in unchanged form to normative samples of children, teenagers, and young adults over the years, there is a dramatic increase in anxiety disorders, in major depression. Major depression and anxiety disorders, by today's criteria, are now 5 to 8 times more prevalent among young people than they were in the 1950s. And this change has been gradual. Suicide rate is 4 times now what it was in the 1950s for children under age 15. And something like 2.5 times what it was then for young people between age 15 and 24.
I'm curious, what makes you think that those higher rates of anxiety and depression are because of how we treat children in schools versus, I don't know, more stress at home, economic stress to career or working couples?
This is a good question. So what I've described is a correlation. There's been a continuous decline in play and a continuous increase in all kinds of mental disorders. There's no relationship between this change in mental disorders and economic stress. Children are far more depressed today than they were during the Great Depression. Adults are far less depressed today than they were during the Great Depression. Children are far more anxious today than they were during the Cold War. You know, I remember the days when we were continuously being warned that the Russians were going to bomb us any time, and we were protecting ourselves, crawling under our desks, and so on and so forth. You know, but children are affected by their real immediate lives and primarily by their friends. We overemphasize how much children are affected by their parents. I don't want to negate the value of parents. Of course, good enough parenting is important. But ask any child, and what is the child's concern, assuming the parents are good enough? The child's primary concern is friends, getting along with other kids, playing with other kids, having control over his or her life. There's every reason to believe that the lack of that is going to cause anxiety and depression. The lack of the opportunity to learn how to control your own life and feel you're in control results in what is called an external sense of control rather than an internal sense of control, a feeling that you are a victim of fate. And there's a standardized questionnaire for that. And over time period, young people have increasingly felt that they are increasingly victims of the world around them and have less and less responded to this questionnaire in a way indicating that they're in control of their life. We know from clinical research that people who don't have this internal sense of control are prone for anxiety and depression.
Peter, you've painted this kind of chilling portrait of a generation of play-starved, anxious, depressed children. What's going to happen when they become adults? What does a generation of play-starved adults look like?
That's a really interesting question. And I think to some degree, we're beginning to see that a little bit. You know, we're beginning to see anxiety. We're beginning to see among adults less hobbies, less looking for fun in family life, and I think less joy, more of a materialistic approach to the world, less of a search for meaning and finding value. I mean, play is all about meaning in a way. It's all about what is it that I really want to do? You know, the child playing is creating the world as he or she wants it to be, rather than simply adjusting to the world as it is. And so the adults who don't grow up playing don't approach the world with the sense, I want to change the world to be the kind of place I want it to be. They grow up with this more anxious sense of, oh, this is the scary world here. How do I adapt to it?
Peter Gray is a professor at Boston College and the author of Free to Learn,